We began the study in 1 Timothy 3. If you have the outline, there are some outlines back in the back if you did not get one. Outline of 1 Timothy 3. We talked last week, made mention of the need for good leaders, beginning from the very start of the church. When the Apostle Paul went on his missionary journeys, on his first missionary journey, after going through various and sundry cities, he went back through them, and on the way back, he appointed elders in those locations. And so what he's doing here, and also in the book of Titus, is he's giving these two young men some instructions on the appointing of elders or having the churches appoint the elders. The evangelists would be the ones to take the lead there in seeing, you know, that the churches did get that done. But in Titus, notice what Paul says to Titus in Titus 1 and verse 5 along this line. Titus chapter 1, Titus right after 2 Timothy. In fact, we may study Titus before we study 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy is more of a personal letter to an evangelist, whereas the first Timothy and Titus are more toward instructing these two evangelists on getting the church organized or in order. Notice in chapter 1 of Titus, verse 5, "For this cause left I thee Crete, which is an island in the Mediterranean, that thou shouldest set in order the things that are wanting or that are lacking or left undone, and ordain elders in every city as I had appointed thee." And then he gives instructions there for the elders. When we get to that chapter, I have a side-by-side listing of the qualifications listed in 1 Timothy 3 and the qualifications given to Titus in the first chapter of the book that bears his name. So it's a point that Paul is making to Timothy that this is not in any particular place. I don't know that it is that Paul is writing to Timothy and Timothy is at Ephesus. Or it seems like he's still at Ephesus. And likely they already have elders, but he's letting Timothy know what's to be done when the appointment of elders and deacons, because he also gives the qualifications for deacons. So last week we looked at a number of things on the first page of this outline: the work of the elders in teaching and guarding against false doctrine, and leading and guiding and admonishing the church, and administering to the needs of the flock. There's some definition for words used for elders: elders or bishops or shepherds. A presbyter that some religious group use is a break off or a part spelling, I guess, of the word elder, presbyteros in the Greek. So even in using the presbyter, and I guess the Presbyterian Church, somehow the other comes from that. I think they have elders, don't they? Maybe elders and deacons, I think I've heard that. But the work of the elders has to do with someone who is older, as far as experience, as far as experience and various experiences in life. And also as a bishop, the word bishop means to oversee or to superintend. And then there's another Greek word used for the word shepherd, where Jesus is referred to by Peter in 1 Peter 5 as the chief shepherd. And many times elders referred, I know the preacher out at Sunset Church of Christ referred to the elders there all the time as shepherds. And I think he was just doing that to try to be different. But here in 1 Timothy 3, the word bishop is used. The word elder is not used. But if we go to Titus 1 and verse 5, we see that the word elder and bishop are used interchangeably, referring to the same office. And also if we go to Acts 20 and verse 17 and Acts 20 and verse 28, we see that Paul is talking about to the elders at Ephesus, referred to as elders in verse 17 of Acts 28, or Acts 20, and then in Acts chapter 20, verse 28, referred to as overseers, or the word bishop, as used here in 1 Timothy 3. We talked about the respect that's due elders. There are a number of verses in the Bible, though there's not a lot at length, but we're told that we're to know the elders and we're to esteem them. Remember them, to imitate their faith, Hebrews 13:7, to obey and submit to them, Hebrews 13:17, and to not receive accusations against them except with two or more witnesses, 1 Timothy 5:19. And it says that those who preach the word and also are elders, that they are worthy of double honor, 1 Timothy 1, 5, 17, 18. We'll look at some of the qualifications. Let's just look at the sheets that we have. Some of the words are not in the same order as they appear. But before that, notice in verse 1 of chapter 3 of 1 Timothy, this is the true saying, if a man desire the office of a bishop, he desires a good work. So any time that elders are appointed, of course, usually the current elders have a large part in dealing with that, but the congregation should be involved too. Else you'll have someone leading, but nobody following. I've seen that situation exist at places, it's a bad situation to have. But if a person is to be thought of to be an elder, that person needs to desire, needs to be willing to be an elder, needs to understand. That's why places where we've appointed elders, I've usually had several sermons before that particular time and maybe hand out worksheets so that each individual member of the congregation could have the qualifications of the elders right there on a worksheet in front of them and check them off for this particular person or that particular person as to whether they're qualified. And in talking about the we won't have it much time to get into each one of these qualifications in great detail, or I'll be same place next Sunday night. So I'm going to move along here. Willingness, if we look on our outline, willingness, ability, that to have a ability to teach, apt to teach, is one of the qualifications there at the end of verse 2. Apt to teach. To have the ability to teach. You have to have a knowledge of God's Word, be able to teach others. Not only to teach one-on-one or whatever, but to be able to show through their lives that they're living the teachings of Christ in their lives. And there's a couple of things that are mentioned as to experience. Because one of the things that's said is that they must not be a novice. Well, we don't use that word today, not a novice. My marginal reading says not one newly come to the faith. We would say not a new convert. And that makes sense. one place I was, I had one uncle who was an elder. Maybe he was a cousin. When somebody is older than me, he's not my cousin, he's my uncle. Because I don't want to appear that old. But this man, I think he was my cousin, he was an elder at the congregation, and I had another cousin, and they appointed him an elder, but he had not been a member, or at least he had not come back to the church for a long period of time. And I felt like that they put too much of a burden on him for the amount of time that he'd been back at the church. Because Ken Folks had been members of the church for years, and likely he had been a member earlier, or probably baptized earlier. But anyway, he had not been back with that congregation that long. But that was just my opinion, and I was a teenager, so it didn't count for much. So as a Christian, not a recent convert. Domestically, the husband of one wife. Well, a one-woman man, as one commentary said, a one-woman man. A married man, not a polygamist. Children in subjection. If you have a situation where you have a family, a man and a wife, and then the children are not in subjection, do not respect the father, the mother, the husband, they're not obedient, it's very easy to see that it would be difficult for an individual that cannot lead the household to lead a congregation of a great number of people. So I think that's what's getting at that. On the next page, we look at the reputation. Two different areas talking about reputation. To be without blame or beyond reproach, of good reputation, is that word blameless. Because you don't want to have someone in a leadership position that someone will then come along and say, well, you know, I used to do so-and-so with that individual, or we used to do that, or he does that on the side, or whatever. This has good report from without. So not only from individuals in the church that this individual knows that that's being considered for an elder, but the qualification has to do with how do people in the neighborhood, in the community, look toward this individual. When I was with one congregation, and I wasn't preaching there, but what they did, they had an individual proposed to be an elder, and they had a group which would include some elders to check with their employer and see how that individual was reported, because, you know, we work outside the home and are coming in contact with other people for the most part. Is he honest or is he reputable type basis is on the job. And so I'd never seen that done before, but they came up to the place of work and interviewed the individual's boss. And then went back with whatever report. And that's probably not bad. You might say, boy, if they don't trust me any more than that, I'm not going to be an elder there. It might have been what I said a long time ago. But I remember back when I went with the government, government job. But anyway, I went with the Internal Revenue Service. I was going to be involved in looking at people's individual tax returns and corporate tax returns. They went out and checked with my neighbor across the road, Miss Rutherford. Miss Rutherford, she's a good old country lady, and she told me about that later, and her son did. And I led singing for about 5-6 gospel meetings down in Grundy County and up and around Altamont and Beersheba and Monteagle and Viola and McMinnville. And this one special agent of the government went down there and asked them about me, and they only knew me a week. But so they were kind of stretching it, because I didn't dig it off the farm, see, so they didn't have much to find out on me. You know, I was back in those hollows when I was growing up, except going away to the Army and going away to Lipscomb. Not going away to Lipscomb, really, but anyway, that has to do with background checks. Character. It says that King James uses the word vigilant. Temperate, I think, comes from the either Revised or Standard, American Standard. And it has to do with self-control, being able to control oneself. And most of these qualifications, you know, are kind of self-evident. They're kind of you can see, well, sure. All Christians need to have that. In fact, except for a couple of these, you know, a Christian has the same qualifications. Doesn't have to be married. Doesn't have to have children. Doesn't have to be after have to teach necessarily to be especially a new convert. But most of these qualifications have to do with, you know, you could say these qualifications just being a Christian. To be sensible. To be sober-minded. The word sober is used in the King James, verse 2. Has to do with not being swayed by sudden impulses. Being able to make a rational decision. So you're talking about people that they're able to use good judgment. Balanced judgment. The next word or phrase that the King James uses in verse 2 is of being of good behavior. That is translated in other Bibles as being, in other translations as being dignified, being orderly, being of good behavior, have a well-organized life. Given to hospitality, just what it says. Especially back in the first century, they had a great need for hospitality. Hospitality may be a little bit different these days, but you would think that this individual back at the time this particular qualification was given would have to do with someone who, because of the lack of holiday inns, quality inns, and comfort inns, would be someone who would take someone into their home, whether they were a member of the church that needed a place or whether it was some stranger. I know when we were in Montana, that was the job of the preacher. If anybody from Western Christian College just up in Canada came through, they just knocked on the door of the preacher. My house was next door to the church. And they said, you know, I need a place to stay tonight. I'm going up into Canada tomorrow, but I need a place to stay tonight. And you wouldn't know from Adam. They just come in and spend the night. We did have one fellow come spend the night. We locked him in the basement. He wasn't from Western Christian. he looked like a bum. But anyway. I told Ron to lock the screen on him. So he wasn't able to get in the house. We weren't too sure of him. Maybe I wasn't in the hospital. Apt to teach, we looked at that before. Skillful in teaching, ability to teach. It doesn't have anything to do with the willingness here. Willingness to serve, mentioned back in verse 1. No drunkard or the King James says not given to wine. And it says that both in the elder and the deacon. It must have had a problem with that back then. I don't think it would suggest today, you know, that everybody therefore, because it's mentioned here, can now go out and drink wine. Because it basically meant, as far as most think, is that the individual was not to be a drunkard. They had difficulty, I think, with that, and I guess in some places, especially with the worship of idols, those that worship idols in their worship, they took a different look or a different. They didn't see things exactly the same as Christians did. They did a lot of things in the name of worship, and in their lives that when Christ came along were taboo and were not to be done. Then next it says, no striker, but gentle. Not violent, but gentle. Not one who was given to violence. One who would be a peacemaker. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. Not greedy of filthy lucre. Well, when's the last time you've seen any filthy lucre? We'd call it not greedy for gain or any kind of gain. Because some people take positions or offices in order to gain something. Most every politician that comes out of being a senator or a representative in our government comes home a millionaire after being away from here. So suddenly, you know, they're not paid a whole lot of money, but they come back as millionaires. A lot of times when people gain power like that, they gain access to individuals. They also are power brokers. But in this situation, I think it has to do with the fact that an elder is in a position of authority and that he's an overseer and superintendent. He has great influence, and that could be for good or for gain, for some kind of monetary gain. No lover of money, one writer said. Not a brawler. That'd go along with not being violent. The idea there, not quarrelsome, not contentious. Not covetous. Not one who would do something just for money. Not like that rich young ruler or rich young man that kept building more and more barns and was very materialistic. So these are the qualifications that are mentioned here. We'll look at some others. And these are qualifications that need to be reviewed if additional elders are appointed in the future, or new elders are appointed in the future. Need to be done at or near that time, the time of appointing them. Next, it talks about deacons. It says, likewise, in other words, there's a need for qualifications among deacons. I don't think sometimes we maybe take this quite as serious because they're not deacons, they're not overseers of the congregation. But note that many of the same qualifications are there. Likewise, must read this, and then we'll go back and look at some other words that mean the same thing as the King James words. Likewise, must the deacons be grave, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, not greedy of filthy lucre. See, there's some of the same things. Holding the mystery of the faith in pure conscience. And let those also first be proved, and let them use the office of deacon, being found blameless. So up through, it's just through verse 8 through 10, and then also verse 12 says, let the deacons be the husband of one wife, ruling their children, their own house as well. In the same way, as it was mentioned by the for the elders. I think there's probably a little bit more spoken of about elders and their children, having believing children, I believe, in Titus chapter 1. But we'll compare that when we get there. Okay, on our outline, on page 2, down Roman numeral 5, deacons. Meaning of the word deacon is the word servant. You know, there were individuals appointed in Acts chapter 6, 7 individuals appointed to do a work. They were to be ministers. They were to be servants. They were to be deacons. Now, whether they fulfilled the office of a deacon at that point is questionable. But basically, that was the use of the word. When Paul refers to him as a servant of the Lord Jesus Christ, that's that same word. Except here, their qualifications relating to a deacon. So that would indicate that it is a separate office that's being considered, as opposed to each one of us being servants. So being a deacon and set aside in a qualified sense is a little bit different than just saying that an individual is a servant. Although, if you look at the qualifications, again, all but have the children and the fact of being married, all of these are qualifications for a Christian. Each Christian should possess these qualifications. First of all, it says the deacon is to be grave, that is, to be serious-minded, not flippant in attitude. Then it says not double-tongued. We don't talk that way these days, do we? Not double-tongued. We'd probably say two-faced. We're probably saying answering one person one way and answering another person another way. And it says it shouldn't be speaking out of both sides of her mouth that way. And we say, well, no one would act. Well, that's, presupposes that deacons may be in situations where they're talking to individuals about their Christian lives or something to that extent. Not addicted to much wine, not given to much wine. Again, the same thing is said in description of that is elsewhere as it is for the elders, not to be drunkards. That has to do with influence. I know when I was at Lipscomb, there would be folks out there that had a whole heap more money than I did said, well, we went to, they went on a summer trip, I think, and they went over to Italy. I said, well, while I was over in Italy, we had wine with our dinner because, you know, that's what they do over there. Well, I hear that they do other things over there, too. And that they do even other things over in other countries. But that doesn't mean, again, I think it's influence. It might not be a problem at all with taking a drink of wine. It might not be a problem at all with taking a drink of beer. But to the person who's thinking about their influence, to a person who's thinking about that chance that you may be addicted to that type of thing. I don't know all that much about alcoholism, but I understand that folks say it's addictive. Addictive. Get to worry about it. Got a nurse back there that knows, probably read some of this in her studies. They got AA meetings, Alcoholics Anonymous, to help them. And I understand it's very difficult, like smoking and other things that can be addictive. I may have told you about this fellow in Montana that he didn't smoke, he didn't drink, he didn't whatever, but he didn't drink Cokes or anything like that. And I did. I drank Cokes. Boy, he jumped my case. He said, they're addictive. You can't stop. So I stopped about 2 weeks. Just to show him that I could stop drinking my Pepsis. But anyway, things can be addictive, and we have to be careful. But I think more than that, we have to watch our influence. And if we're in a position where people are going to look at us, toward us, as far as leadership, or as far as being in a particular office relating to the church, relating to Christ, then we need to take more care for our influence. Not greedy for gain. Same thing as talking about with the elder. Not a lover of money. Not wanting to do things for base gain. Whether it be something having to do with the office of deacon. Some of the deacons at some large congregation have great responsibilities. One of our elders is our treasurer. Many places, one of the deacons is the treasurer of large congregations. And that takes, and he handles a whole lot of money, say at Madison Church of Christ, or at Brentwood Hills, or at some of these congregations. They can handle millions of dollars a year. And so there has to be some Christ-like individuals fulfilling these positions, and therefore they have these qualifications. Holding the mystery of faith. Holding the mystery of faith and a pure conscience. Nothing is said in the qualification for deacon that appear other than this one having anything to do with teaching, perhaps. But all Christians should be able to teach, and I think this and many others who've looked into it, the thinking here in this verse, that this individual needs to be a good student of the Bible, has knowledge of the Bible, and able to help with the teaching of the Bible if needed. Husband and one wife, it's the individual that's married. You probably never get in a discussion unless maybe there'd been some divorces involved. Managing children and household, ruling their own house as well. And most of the time I've heard in discussions, I know we've got a situation where there's maybe just one child, and most congregations that I've been involved with have held that they agree that could refer to just having one child. If somebody says, how are your children? And you don't have but one, you don't correct them, because the word children includes the singular. Prove yourself blameless. Look at verse 10. It says, let these also first be proved. That doesn't mean somebody said, well, they have a period of of time that they be on probation. That's not what it's saying. It means they've got to be a Christian for a period of time where you know this individual is the type of individual that can handle whatever it is you're assigning to that individual, and therefore will be qualified here. Not, my idea would be that they're not a novice either, not just a new Christian. And the verse 12 is all right. And it talks about wives. It says, even so must their wives. Well, there's an italics there. And there's some discussion as to whether this just means women or the wives of the deacons. It's mentioned right after, or right in the middle of the discussion of the deacons. I would take it to mean it would have to do with the deacons. It could be women, the wives of the elders, deacons, and other women that might be in some kind of leadership position. But other than what it says, it would appear to be the wives of the deacon. And basically, it's some of the same type qualifications. Up on page 3 of our outline, and we're about through. The qualities that there are to be grave or to be serious, not flippant, not slanderers, not busybodies, be sober, have self-control, faithful in all things, to be consistent in the way that the person lives. Paul's reason for writing, verse 14-15, these things write unto thee, hoping to come unto thee shortly. But if I tarry long, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of truth. Basically, it says these things need, just by like the same thing he said to Titus in Crete, to set things in order. In other words, the church is to have is to be properly organized, and in a church that is in a position to do so, should have elders and should have deacons. Is what I get from that. Same thing as what Paul said to Titus, that he, to put things in order, to have things organized. This is basically, I've been at churches where we didn't have elders, but as soon as they had qualified elders, I felt that they should have, or had men who were qualified to be elders, that they should have elders. Business meetings many times don't go beyond the spiritual growth of the least spiritual member. Does that make sense? If you've got 8 to 10 men in a business meeting, and you've got somebody that just attends church every 3 or 4 weeks, and he comes to the business meeting, what are you going to do? Say you're not a voting member? See, it's very difficult. I've been in situations where it's very difficult for preachers sometimes to convince 10 or 12 or 13 men about a certain way of doing something or coming to a consensus. I had a discussion one time with in a business meeting as to whether we should insure the building. You say, well, that's a given. Well, that wasn't a given to this congregation. you have to understand what the givens are sometimes. I know I mentioned that, and most of the men did think that was the case, but this individual, one individual there and his family, thought that it was a lack of faith on our part to insure the building. And so, at that particular time, the building didn't get insured. And we had kids coming on those buses. Remember when y'all had the buses running back a few years ago? We had 4 buses going out. And the church wasn't insured. The buses were insured, but probably just not that much to take care of 60 or 70 kids. Then he goes on to say, in closing of the chapter, and without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest. And this basically just sums up Christ, sums up the gospel, sums up the teachings of Christ and of his life and his teaching, kind of summarized. God was manifest in the flesh. John said that that the Word became flesh and dwelled among us, justified in the Spirit. He was confirmed, you know, by the Spirit, confirmed by his ability to do the miracles he did. He was seen of angels. He was preached unto the Gentiles and believed on in the world and received up into glory. So it's kind of a summary. Our statement of faith there. a mystery that was hidden in the past, but that was revealed in the first century, the good news of Christ. Okay, next time, first Sunday in April, we'll look at chapter 4. Appreciate your attention. If there's one here tonight, not a Christian, why not come to Christ tonight, confessing Jesus as the Son of God, repenting of your sins, be baptized for the forgiveness of sin, and to arise from baptism, walk in newness of life. As a Christian, tonight if you have a need for our prayers on your behalf, wish to rededicate your life to Christ, you have an opportunity to do that tonight as we stand and sing the song selected.